Welcome back to the OU Torah series of Rav Hirsch on the Parsha. This week we'll be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parsha's Shoftim, and we'll be sharing a few different short thoughts that Rav Hirsch has in various parts of the Parsha. Towards the beginning of the Parsha, in Parak Tes Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Beis, we read, V'lo sakim lecha matzeva asher sanei Hashem elokecha. You shall not erect for yourself a matzeva, a stone, a pillar, and that to serve, which Hashem your God hates. And Rav Hirsch discusses here the relationship between a matzeva and a mizbeach. We find in Sefer Bereishis regarding the Avos that sometimes they built a matzeva, sometimes they built a mizbeach, and the difference between the two is that a matzeva is one single large stone slab, which itself is served. The person who is making the matzeva would just find an appropriate stone and would worship using it. A mizbeach is, of course, as we know, in something constructed of multiple smaller stones and put together and built to form a structure which was then used in divine worship. Now, we find in the Rashi comments here on this pasuk, Rashi says about that Hashem hates the matzeva. Rashi says mizbeach avanim u'mizbeach adama tziva la'asos. The Hashem commanded us to make a mizbeach out of stones or earth. But this Hashem despises. Ki chok hoysa laknanim, this was something that was a divine law, a divine mode of worship among the Kananim. Va'afal pisha hoysa ahuva lo bimeha avos, even though such service was beloved to Hashem in the days of the avos, as we find that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all used matzevos. Achshav son'a, now Hashem hates it. Me'achar sha'asuha elu chok la'avodas elilim, because these, the Kananim, have transformed it into a rite of idol worship. So what's the difference between Matzeva and Mizbeach? And why is it now, all of a sudden, a mode of worship despised by Hashem? So Rav Hirsch comments, he says that there's a difference between the relationship between man and God before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, there was no code of conduct, we can call it, that as provided by the Torah. And when one served Hashem, it was just a recognition of Hashem as the creator of the world, as the one who dictates the rules of nature, as the one who guides history. But the day-to-day activities of a person and one's actual behavior and throughout his life was not something that was devoted necessarily to Hashem, because there was no there were no mitzvot. There was no way to serve Hashem. And whereas after Matan Torah, the big transformation that Matan Torah made in our lives as Jewish people, as recipients of the Torah, is that now there are 613 commandments that guide our daily life. And all our actions are done through are viewed through the lens of the Torah. And we use the Torah as our guidebook in all that we do. It encompasses all aspects of our life, whether what we would consider religious, what we would consider secular and mundane. Our lives at home, our lives in the street, our lives in shul, wherever we might be, the Torah guides our lives. And so this is the transformation that came about as a result of the Torah that was given to the Jewish people. So when before Matan Torah, when there were no mitzvos, and serving Hashem meant recognizing Him as creator, recognizing His role in nature, so one served Hashem by taking a single stone, as found in nature, and then worshiping it. Worshipping something that occurs naturally, and because that was the foundation for recognition of Hashem, and that was the foundation on which they served Hashem, the fact that Hashem guided nature and created the world. So a matzeva represented this idea. However, now with Matan Torah and a different relationship with Hashem than previously. So we worship Hashem with a matzeva on the basis, which basically says that we worship Hashem on the basis of His role as creator, as ruler of nature. That is not what Hashem wants. That is now achshav sunah. Now Hashem hates it. Hashem does not want us to worship in that way. Instead, Hashem wants us to worship Him with the Mizbeach. And what the Mizbeach is, opposed to the Matzeva, is a man-made structure. Matzeva occurs naturally, and the Mizbeach has to be constructed and built. And the idea is that it's man's actions to strive closer to Hashem. Because now, our devotion to Hashem is not based on, or just is not solely a recognition of Him as Creator, and that's it. But now our devotion to Hashem is how is judged based on our behavior, on our actions, and the fact that we accept Hashem's sovereignty over all of our all spheres in our life, over our actions, our thoughts, our heart, our desires, whatever it might be, wherever we are, in whatever way we exist, we think, we act, all of it. Hashem reigns supreme over all. His Torah is our guidebook, and it is our actions that are important to Him. Our who we are, what we do, not just what we believe, but what we do and how we lead our lives. And that's represented by Mizbeach, our actions, building something that is used to serve Hashem. So today, or modern times, or post-Matan Torah era, one can only serve Hashem through Mizbeach, not through Matzeva. And the Matzeva has been invalidated. It was beloved in the times of the Avos, because the Avos lived in a pre-Matan Torah age. But now, after Matan Torah, it is Asher Soneh Hashem Elokecha. And Rav Hirsch adds that this idea of the Matzeva and the Mizbeach fits in perfectly right here at this point in the Torah. This is in the same section as the beginning of our parsha, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha, to appoint judges in all your gates. Asher Hashem Elokecha nusin lecha lishvatecha, which Hashem gives you according to your tribes, v'shoftu as amishpat tzedek, and they shall judge you in according to the judgments of judgment in accordance with righteousness. And then the Torah continues, tzedek tzedek tirdof, to pursue righteousness. And the idea of Hirsch says is that we need shoftim, we need to pursue justice, because it's important to remember that our actions and our daily lives have to be dedicated to Hashem. And one cannot just be a believer in God but not keep the mitzvot of the Torah. And so shoftim v'shotrim are there to ensure adherence to the mitzvot and to mete out punishments for those who fail to keep the mitzvot. And this is because it's to stress that our actions, our commitment to the mitzvot of the Torah are of extreme importance and go hand in hand with belief in God, which in itself is not enough. And so, then after Shoftim v'Shotrim, the Torah tells us, Lo sita lecha asherah kol etz, not to plant an asherah tree or any other type of tree, etz al mizbeach Hashem Elokecha asher ta'asalach, near the mizbeach of Hashem. And this is the next pasuk, which is connected to the previous mitzvah of Shoftim. And this is mentioned in Chazal. The Chazal tell us in Sanhedrin, someone who appoints a judge over the community who is not appropriate, is as if he planted an asherah tree in the Jewish community. Because the pasuk says, first shoftim v'shotrim, and the next pasuk says, and the next section is, lo sita lecha asherah. What's the connection between shoftim and asherah? Is that an inappropriate judge is as bad as an asherah. Rav Hirsch explains that an asherah, or other types of trees, were worshipped because it was meant to in accordance with the customs of the idolatry, that there was this intermediary to the heathen gods and forces of nature that were served by the polytheists who worshipped God through His various manifestations in nature. They worshipped trees and so on. And if we don't have shoftim, we don't have appropriate justice systems to ensure the proper commitment to mitzvos, then it's as if we built an asherah, and as if we said that mitzvah observance doesn't matter. What matters is we recognize that there is a God in nature, and recognizing God in nature, we believe in a God, we recognize that there is a God who's running the world. That's not sufficient. We need to have shoftim and ensure commitment to Torah in our daily lives, and that we can sanctify ourselves by devoting our actions to Hashem, whether in the, as we said, either in the strictly religious areas and also in the more mundane and human areas. We devote both our intellect and our physical size to Hashem. And so if there's an inappropriate judge who doesn't do his job well, that's like planting an Asherah tree because it's sending the same message. And then again, this is the next pasuk, v'lo sokim l'cha matzeva, that we shouldn't have any matzevos asher sonei Hashem l'kecha, because Hashem hates them. And this is again a continuation of the same idea. The matzeva represents God and nature, and this is not something that we hope, that we want to have represented in our service of Hashem, because just like shoftim are important, and just like an Asherah is a bad idea, matzeva is a similar message. And finally, this thought is concluded in the next pasuk. Lo sizbach l'Hashem Elokecha shor v'aseh asher yeh bo mum. You may not sacrifice to Hashem, your God, an ox or a sheep that has blemish in it, kol davar ra, or anything bad. Ki so abas Hashem Elokecha hu, because it is an abomination before Hashem. What's this doing here in connection with shoftim, Asherah, Matzeva? Now we have the prohibition of bringing an animal that's a baal mum on the Mizbeach as a carbon. Why? The idea is the same idea. Because it's not just the thought that counts when bringing a carbon, but the animal itself must be whole and complete and in every way, throughout the entire body, to show that, because when a person is bringing a carbon, he is symbolically offering himself to Hashem through this animal offering. And to offer an animal that is injured, blemished, imperfect, would imply that one can give some aspects of his life to Hashem, and other aspects of his life he can withhold from Hashem. They can be imperfect before Hashem. They don't have to be involved in the service of Hashem. I serve Hashem in some ways, and the other ways I conveniently ignore the fact that Hashem wants me to do certain things. So the Torah prohibits us to offer a baal mum as a carbon. A carbon that a person brings to Hashem must be complete and whole and healthy in all of its body, to show that we offer all of our aspects of our lives to Hashem completely, without holding anything back. All areas of our lives are meant to be conducted in a way that we are judged by the standard of the Torah and by Hashem's wishes. And so here too, the Torah, in this context of shoftim, Asherah, and Matzeva, reminds us not to bring any karbanos from animals with blemishes. And this shows us, as the verse presents, the opening of this week's parsha in a way that there is a single idea, and this idea is carried through the varying different mitzvos that seem to have no connection at all. The verse shows us why they are strung together here at the opening of the parsha. This week's parsha contains the mitzvah of Minui Melech, of appointing a Jewish king over the nation. And this, we know that this of course is an idea where the Jewish people had a mitzvah, which the Jewish people fulfilled later on, after when the time of Shmuel HaNavi, when they asked for a king and they appointed Shaul, and Shmuel was upset at them for asking for a king, despite the fact the Torah presents it here as a mitzvah. The Torah says, "Ki savo el ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach," when you enter the land that Hashem your God has given you, "v'rishta," and you take possession of it, "v'yoshavta," and you live in it, "v'amarta," and you will say, "Asima alai melech kechol ha'goyim asher sivo soy," I will place a king above me, like all the nations that are around me. "Som tosim alecha melech asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo," you shall certainly appoint a king over yourself, whom Hashem has chosen. And so here the Torah tells us that this is what you should do. This is a mitzvah. When you conquer the land, you dwell in it, then you shall appoint a king. And so the Jewish people eventually did so, but Shmuel was angry that way they did it. So what was the problem with their request, and why does the Torah tell us to appoint a king? So it first starts by pointing out the Torah only commands us to appoint a king after you have conquered the land and taken possession of it and are safely living there. The reason being that the king is not meant to lead us into battle. There was no king for the conquest of the land, because we understand that the conquest of the land is, it's the Oretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach. The land comes directly from Hashem. We don't need a king to lead us into battle to conquer it. We don't need skill in battle. We don't need warriors. What we need is to be, as the first says, we need to be ourselves. In fact, he cites this through the Sifrei on this pasuk, which says, Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach. And the Sifrei comments, Bizchusach, in your merit. Not in the merit of some king, not through prowess on the battlefield, but through your own personal merit. That is how we conquer Eretz Yisrael. And so only after the land is conquered and settled are we commanded to appoint a king. And that's the first clue that we have to what the king is by learning what the king is not. And so what is the need for a king? Why, after safely living in the land, conquering it, and being in control of it, is there a need for a king? So Rav Hirsch says that the need for a king is to ensure that Hashem's protection and blessing for the Jewish people continues. Because again, the Jewish people conquer Eretz Yisrael bizchuscha, in your zechus, because of your zechus as Shomrei Torah, mitzvos devoted to Hashem, Ahavas Hashem, Yiras Hashem. That's how every individual contributes to earning the right to win the battle for Eretz Yisrael. And in order to remain in Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people have to remain on that level. They have to maintain that standard which earned them a ticket into the land. And so, once they're in the land, they will say it's a good idea to have a king to maintain that standard. The king is however, Rav Hirsch says that the king is not to be appointed until afterwards, so that to make sure that people understand what the king is not. The king is not meant to lead them in battle. He's meant to preserve them for who they are. The king is not meant to be a leader to the world on the outside or against the world on the outside, but to be a leader to the people from within. His primary relationships is the internal relationship, the internal leadership, and not the external relationships, and not a leader to the world, a representative out externally to fight battles, form alliances, establish political, diplomatic relationships with other countries. That's not the primary role of the king. The role of the king is to his people. And that's why it's Osima Olai Melech, for the people's sake. Now, what does it mean when it says that I will appoint a king, Kechol HaGoyim Asher Siviv Osoi, that I want a king like the nations around me? So he explains that the other nations of the world appoint a king in order to unify themselves so that they can develop more and become more powerful in relationship to the other countries, to the rest of the world. Whereas the Jewish people want a king, k'chol ha'goyim asher sivivo soy, just as the other nations want to unify themselves, but for the purpose of being stronger than everyone else. The Jewish people want to have a king to unify themselves and keep them in line so that they can be the best they can be for themselves, so that they can accomplish what their mission internally. Not necessarily to be a representative to the world outside or to accomplish more against everybody else. And this is, so the king is meant to be a moral unifier of the Jewish people, because there are multiple shvatim, and we've discussed this before, that each shevet has their own role and their own skills and their own unique approach to Avodas Hashem. So this, of course, has its positive positive aspects in that it enables for a diversity of views and a diversity of approaches to serving Hashem. And at the same time, it's a very decentralized way of having a nation. And so the king is meant to unify all these different factions, these different approaches, and make sure to keep everyone unified and focused on the single moral responsibility of the Jewish people, the commitment to Torah, and the feeling of national commitment to Avodas Hashem. And this is what was missing throughout Sefer Shoftim. When in Sefer Shoftim, in the stories of Pesel Micha and Pilegesh Begiva, the pasuk tells us, "Bayomim ha'im ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar be'enov yase." In those days, there was no king among the Jewish people. Everybody did what was right in his eyes. Everyone did what was right in his eyes. There was no one unifying leader, one figure at the head of the nation who was ensuring that everybody was working together to serve Hashem. Everybody was doing their own thing and approaching it in their own way, and this led to conflict and problems. And there was no one person overseeing the internal behavior of the Jewish people. And this is what led to issues such as Pesel Micha and Pilegesh Begiva. And that's why the Torah laments the fact that there was no king among the Jewish people, specifically in relationship to internal problems, like the civil war that resulted from Pilegesh Begiva, like the idolatry that occurred through Pesel Micha. That's the problems, those are the problems that the king was designed to fix. And that's when the role of the king was sorely missed in Jewish history. However, when the Jewish people requested that Shmuel appoint a king, Shmuel was upset because what prompted the people to ask for a king? Shmuel told them, and this is in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Ches, Vatiru, Shmuel says to them, and you saw, ki Nachash melech b'nei Amon bo aleichem, that Nachash, the king of Amon, came against you in battle. Vatomru li, and you said to me, lo ki melech imloch aleinu, v'Hashem elokeichem alkechem. And this is, and Hashem is your king. Meaning, the Jewish people were prompted to ask for a king because they were frightened when the people of Ammon came to fight them. And they said, we need a leader, we need a king, we need a warrior to lead us in battle. So Shmuel says to them that because Nachash Melech Ammon came against you, you asked for a king. Remember, Hashem Elokeichem Malkechem. In the context of battles, in the context of your relationship with the world around you, in the context of defending yourselves, Hashem Elokeichem Malkechem. For that, you don't need a king. That's not what the king is for. That's not what the king's purpose was. But, so that was the problem. We also see this when there's another pasuk where Shmuel describes the people's request for a king. Shmuel says, "Vayom." Well, actually, we see this in the people's request when it actually happened. "Vayomru," the people said to Shmuel, "Lo, no, ki im melech yalin, there should be a king over us. V'hayinu gam anachnu k'chol agoyim, we shall also be like all the other nations. Ushfatanu malkenu, our king shall judge us. V'yatzal lefanenu, he shall go before us. V'nilcham esmilcham oseinu, and fight our battles." So regarding this pasuk, Chazal say in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Amud Beis, that there are two different groups speaking here. Chazal tells us, Zakenim Shabador Kehogan Shalu. The elders of the generation, they asked appropriately for a king. Shenemar, they are the ones who said in the Pasuk, Tenalanu Melech Lishoftenu, that our king shall judge us, meaning, like the Shoftim. The Shoftim ensure the observance of the mitzvos, the adherence to Torah. That's what they wanted the Melech to do. Abo Ame Ha'aretz Shebohen Kilkalu, the Ame Ha'aretz, the ignoramuses and the people, they're the ones who created the problem that Shmuel was upset about. Shenemar, they are the ones who said, Bo'yinu kam anachu chol agoyim v'yotzol lefanenu, that he'll go before us, v'nilcham esmilcham oseinu. That's what the aspect of the kings fighting in battles and leading the troops, that's what the Ame Ha'aretz asked for. Those are the ones who Shmuel was upset at. But the Zakenim, they asked appropriately. The Zakenim asked for someone who Shvatanu Malkenu, the king shall judge us, the king shall be our chief shofet, our chief justice, to apply the laws of Torah and ensure that they were being followed among the people. That was okay. And Shmuel was upset, though, because that this was not the right time for a king, because as we saw in the pasuk said that the right time for the king is after the time when the land is conquered. V'rishtav yoshavta ba va'amarta asima alai melech, And as we see later on, that there were wars that had to be fought by David to finish the conquest of the land. And so David HaMelech was the right person, was the right time. Shaul was not yet the right time. And then once the land was conquered, there's one war that remains the responsibility of the king, and that is the war against Amalek. We know that the Rambam writes, and it's based on the Gemara, that this, that the Rambam begins his Hilchos Melachim, citing the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that when we take control of Eretz Yisrael, we have three responsibilities that must be done in sequence. The first is Minui Melech, appointing a king. Then is Milchemes Amalek, destroying Amalek. And then is Binyan Beis HaMikdash, in that order. And so this is the purpose the king serves to. That's the only war the king is supposed to fight, though, necessarily. The king is not meant to be a military leader, otherwise than that. However, in the time of Shmuel was still working on bringing the people back closer to Hashem, so that they would be worthy of completing the conquest of the land, and then destroying Amalek, and then they could build a Beis HaMikdash. Shmuel was working on bringing the people closer to Hashem. And once he accomplished that, then David could complete the conquest of the land, and Shaul fought a war against Amalek, and then eventually Shlomo could build a Beis HaMikdash, which David could not because of all the wars that he had fought. And so this is the role of the king, and this is not, and this is what the king is not to be. Now we can understand why there was a problem with Shmuel had a problem with appointing a king, even though the Torah requires it as a mitzvah. But it has to be in the right time and for the right purpose. And David was the ideal king in this regard. However, we see already from Shlomo, his son, even though he built the Beis HaMikdash, but he already started to deviate from this idea of the ideal king for the Jewish people, because he began to be a king to the external world, building up his wealth, and violating the prohibitions that the Torah sets for a king, of not acquiring too many horses and not acquiring too much money and not marrying too many wives. But he married many wives to form political alliances, and he built up his wealth and displayed that to the visiting royalty, and he acquired many horses and developed his army. And so already, even though Shlomo had built the Beis HaMikdash, he began the downward spiral that eventually led to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And Rav Hirsch says, this is the meaning of the Medrash, or the Gemara, when Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Alef Amud Beis, which says, B'shah shenasa Shlomo es bas Paro, at the moment when Shlomo married the daughter of Paro, Yorad Gavriel v'na'at kona bayom, Gavriel descended to the world, the Malach Gavriel, and planted a stick in the sea, v'ha'lo shirton, and it became a sandbank, v'olav nivne krach godol shel Romi, and became the foundation for the city of Rome. It's specifically when Shlomo began to marry Bas Paro, form political alliances, be a king who saw his primary role as an externally facing role rather than an internally facing role. That is when Rome began to grow. The foundation was set at that moment in time for a Churban. That's the connection between these two events, specifically the marriage to Bas Paro. At the end of the parsha, jumping a few chapters here, we read about Eglah Arufa. And Eglah Arufa was a ceremony that was performed when a murder victim was found between two cities, and his murderer remains unidentified and on the loose. And so we perform this ritual where we take a calf that has never been used for any work at all and take it down to a valley that is unplanted. And the calf is beheaded. And there is a recitation by the townspeople of the nearest town, leaders of the nearest town, and the Kohanim, who say that we did not spill this, the blood of this person, we did not see the murder happen, and they ask Hashem for forgiveness for what has happened. So, Rav Hirsch discusses, in Parakop Aleph Pasuk Zion, he discusses what is this declaration that the elders of the nearest town say, Yodenu lo shafchu es hadam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. Our hands did not spill this blood and our eyes did not see. So there's already a Mishnah in Sota which says that why would we think that the Ziknei Ha'ir, the elders of the city, are the ones who actually spill this blood? But the Mishnah says, "Elo shelo bal liyadenu ufatarnuhu below mazon velo reinuhu v'inachnuhu below levaya." They declare that he did not come to us, and we sent him away without any food, and that we did not see him and let him leave without any accompaniment out of our town. Not that they did not kill him with their own hands. Of course, they didn't do that, but that they have no part in it. That they didn't. They did not deny food to anyone or deny a visitor with accompaniment outside the town on the way, on the road, in the deserted area between towns. Rashi explains there that it was not killed through us means that we did not deny anybody food and thereby require him to commit theft and rob somebody to get food, and through which he was killed. In other words, the way Rashi reads the Mishnah, the way Rashi sees this story, is that we would think what happened is there was a poor man who came to town begging, and nobody gave him food. And so what did he do? He left the town and tried to rob somebody on the road, and that person killed him in self-defense. So we would think the townspeople would be responsible because they put him in a situation where he had no choice but to rob somebody, and so they deny any responsibility that they ever did such a thing. So this is how Rashi understands the story. In the Yerushalmi, There's two versions of the Gemara Yerushalmi in Sota. Discusses the similar declaration for similar purposes, but they have two ways of explaining it. That according to the Chachamim in Bavel, they said that this declaration that we didn't spill the blood, we didn't see anything, means that they were saying we didn't see the victim. But according to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, they say that we didn't see the murderer, meaning that we don't know who did it, and that we're pretending we don't know. We're not turning a blind eye to the murder. But according to the Chacham in Bavel, the Chacham in Eretz Yisrael say that they're saying we did not see the murderer. We don't know who committed the crime, and yet we're willfully ignoring it. And according to the Chacham in Bavel, they say we did not see the victim. That we didn't see the victim come through our town and looking for food and ignore him. And that's how he ended up dead on the road and outside the town, because he was hungry and wandering outside. So we see from these understandings of the story, although we might initially think that the most simple way to explain this is that we didn't see the murderer, like the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael say in the Gemara Yerushalmi, but it does make sense to say that we didn't see him, we didn't see the victim. and we didn't let the victim go. But what's interesting is the way Rashi reads it in the Gemara and the Bavli, is that Rashi sees the that it's the victim was actually the aggressor. And this is how we have to realize that what happened here is the victim is the aggressor because he attacked somebody on the road out of desperation. The murderer really killed in self-defense. And he is completely exempt from any responsibility here. Somebody was trying to kill him or rob him, and he defended himself. He's innocent. The only guilty person here is, in this situation, would be the people who did not take care of the poor man. Again, the murderer is innocent because he acted in self-defense. The poor man is also to a certain degree innocent. He tried to find food and he couldn't. He had no choice. Who is the guilty party? The elders of the nearest town who let this man go. And that's why when we find someone killed on the road, we, assuming this is what happened, we lay the responsibility at the feet of the people in the nearest town. However, what happens here is that these elders come and they make a declaration, Einenu lo ra'u, which means that the elders of the town are able to say, as our Hirsch writes, in our society, no one is left in such dire need that he is compelled by poverty to commit a crime. They can say this. This is part of what is they require them to say as part of this ritual of the Egla Rufa. So we see that this is a common thing that people could say. This is our approach towards the poor, that we take care of them. And nobody is compelled by poverty to have to resort to such terrible actions to take care of themselves. This would never happen in a Jewish town, and these Zakenim are comfortable saying that. And this is the attitude that we have towards tzedakah, where it's considered to be, with the declaration of Egla Rufa means that there is such comfort saying this, it such goes without saying in a Jewish society. And this can explain what happens in the next pasuk. In the next pasuk, they say, with the Kohanim recite, they say, "Kaper la'amacha Yisrael asher podisa Hashem, forgive your people Yisrael, your nation Yisrael, that you redeemed Hashem." So, what is the connection of this whole Egla Rufa? There's a murder, and the Kohanim are asking Hashem for atonement based on the fact that they are your nation, whom you redeemed, which essentially means who you redeemed from Egypt. And reverses that the Amcha Yisrael is referring to Hashem's declaration at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, V'lakachti Yashem li la'am. What is the connection? And in fact, Chazal underscored this connection. In Hori Yostav Vav, the Gemara says, Kaper l'amcha Yisrael shepodisa Hashem, says, Re'uya kapara zo shetechaper al yotzei Mitzrayim. The atonement that is being accomplished through the Egla Rufa is worthy of atoning for those who left Mitzrayim. What does that mean? What that means, says Rav Hirsch, is that when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, it was to make us into a nation. And it wasn't just to make us into a nation devoted to Hashem, but to make us into a nation united to one another, with a community that had that emphasized a connection, a social connection to one another, where we follow the mitzvos and interact with one another in a way of where we love one another and act with justice towards one another and treat each other appropriately. And Rav Hirsch says that this goal of Hashem, what Hashem wanted to see in the Am Hashem, that we should be an Am, truly united people in the service of Hashem while taking care of one another. So we are proof, if the Zakenim can stand over this corpse and say, Yodeinu lo shachu es adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u, this cannot be our responsibility. We never let a poor person come through town without taking care of him. If this poor person felt the need to rob somebody, it cannot be because he was in our town. In our town, we do not treat poor people in such a way. We never let them go through our town without taking care of them. When they can truly declare that, in all honesty, and know that that is the case, then that's the Am Hashem that Hashem is looking for. That defines us as an Am, a tightly knit social community that cares about one another. And when that happens, That is when they can declare this. This declaration alone makes them worthy of kapara, and it's worthy of kapara for the Yotzei Mitzrayim, because it means that all the generations in the past, beginning from Yetzias Mitzrayim, they did their job. They produced children, even if they themselves did not reach this level, but they produced a generation that was eventually, many years later, that was able to be an Am Hashem, that was able to say Yodinu Lo Shavchu Es Adam Hazeh Ve'Einenu Lo Ra'u, that was able to say confidently that no poor person in their society is ever compelled to commit a crime to support himself, because we take care of our poor people. That is enough to be a kapara for the Yotzei Mitzrayim and all subsequent generations of the past, because they produced such a generation. They were the ancestors of this society that has reached such a level of love for one another and a feeling of charitableness towards one another. And we recognize that this does not happen overnight. This does not happen in a vacuum, but it comes from years and years and generations of influence. And the root of this wonderful proclamation that can be made in honesty of Yodeinu Lo Shavchu Es Adam Hazeh Ve'Einenu Lo Ra'u can be traced back to ancestors all the way back to Yotzei Mitzrayim. And this is the meaning of Zechus Avos, says Rav Hirsch. Zechus Avos means that we are a nation there, and what we accomplish today is all built off of everything done by our ancestors. We would not be who we are. We would not be at a point where we are today if not for our ancestors and the generations that came before us. And not just our parents, not just our grandparents and great-grandparents, but all the way to Yotzei Mitzrayim. And when we do something right, when we accomplish a great deal, when we serve Hashem in the right way, that reflects well on all our ancestors. The ability to declare Yodinu Lo Shavchu Es Adam Hazeh Ve'Einenu Lo Ra'u is a kapara for Yotzei Mitzrayim, because that's when they began to work towards becoming an Am Hashem. And when they truly reached that, and when that goal was reached, even many years in the distant future, it served as a kapara for them because it vindicated all their efforts. Sure, they didn't accomplish it in their own time. Perhaps not as well as they would have liked. And maybe it took years and years, generations, until it was able to be realized. But when it is realized, it came from them. And we recognize that in the declaration of the Kohanim, Kaper la'amacha Yisrael asher podisa Hashem. The Kohanim are responding to the declaration of the Zakenim that we just read. And when the Zakenim say this, the Kohanim subsequently say, Hashem, look at your people who are able to say such a thing. Give them a kapara for what happened. And give a kapara to the Yotzei Mitzrayim, la'amacha Yisrael asher podisa Hashem. Because look, we're finally reached the level of Am Hashem that you asked of them, that you envisioned for them. When you said, v'lokachti eschem li la'am, many, many years ago, hundreds, thousands of years ago, in Mitzrayim, when you spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, that goal has been realized. Kaper la'amacha Yisrael asher podisa Hashem. Now all the mistakes and all the sins of the Yotzei Mitzrayim should be forgiven because they accomplished the goal that you set out for them. This is the declaration that the Zakenim make with the moment Egla Rufa. This is why it's such a momentous occasion, that it's worthy of kapara, just because they can say that it's not their responsibility, that they were not at fault. And this is the connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this teaches us what it means to be a Jewish nation, what it means to be an Am Hashem, and how that translates into our relationships to one another. And it also teaches us an important lesson about what we owe to the generation that came before us, and how if we can accomplish the goals that our ancestors set out for themselves and their children, and perhaps they were not able to accomplish, but if we can accomplish them many years later, we can vindicate everything that they went through. We can vindicate everything they did right. We can vindicate. We can atone for everything they did wrong. If our grandparents and great-grandparents saw themselves as trying to accomplish something in the service of Hashem, and maybe they couldn't reach it, but they guided their children on that path. Maybe their children didn't reach it, but maybe we now, many generations later, have reached it. We can play a role in the vindication and atonement for our ancestors by seeing through the goals they set for themselves and their future generations in serving Hashem. And this is a powerful lesson for us that comes through from how Rav Hirsch sees the story of the Eglah Arufah.